Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of the Gadget Show podcast with me, Susie Perry, and him in the glasses, Jason Bradbury.
Hello, it's great to be here for what is actually a special episode that we just had to do because there's been so many significant announcements in the world of tech. Obviously, not least the Apple announcements and also the brand new announcement from Sony regarding their new PlayStation 5 Pro, and IFA has happened in Berlin, which is why you might notice that someone that we all love is about to join us.
Yes, exactly that. So we enlisted the help of our very own John Bentley to guide us through lots of this information. So it's lovely, lovely, lovely to see you, John. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. And I hope you're splendid too. And it's lovely to be here with you.
So, John, how was IFA for you this year?
Well, I mean, it's a lovely event. I mean, one mustn't go with too high expectations, but it is basically a very, very large tech showroom which you can wander around, and it's very popular. It's got about 200,000 visitors, and some launches there of new things. I mean, I noticed there was the world's thinnest folding phone, for example, the Honor Magic V3, only 9.2 millimetres thick or thin, and nevertheless manages to get a Snapdragon 8 Generation 3 processor in there, and three cameras with a 3.5 times optical zoom and so on. It was that was worth seeing. Obviously, now that's arguably been overshadowed by the new Huawei Trifold phone, not to mention Apple's recent announcements. But it was good to see and good to try out. Although one must have that slightly qualified view that folding phones are still, I think, about 1.5% of the market and growing, admittedly, but that it's still quite a specialist area. I mean, Shark Ninja came up with some quite interesting stuff, some of which is now already on sale. I like their coffee maker that they're trying to make it very easy to operate whilst also being highly customizable. So you get calibrates itself automatically according to your beans, so you get the right size grind. It does other things besides do espresso based drinks, and it's got a hands-free frother, including cold frothing. I was pretty impressed with that.
Don't tell me they used AI. They used AI in the marketing brief for it.
AI is everywhere. I've got AIs, and people are now starting to call it different things. I mean, like LG are now calling it affectionate intelligence. Samsung is AI for all. I know even Apple are now calling it Apple intelligence. Everyone wants their own take on AI, which is good. I mean, they try and squeeze into it. I mean, LG on their stand, they had an air purifier designed for cats that used AI, for example. So,
What? Yeah, Susie, there you go.
Yes,
I mean, you had me at hands-free frother, to be honest, John. But now you've got me with this with cat AI. Yes, I'm all in for that. I'm all ears.
Oh, yes, it should have been there. The idea of it's a nice comfy seat for your cat with an air purifier underneath. I couldn't quite work out whether the seat was heated or not. But anyway, the idea is that your cat sits there nice and comfortably, and when it's on there, the air purifier is off. But as soon as it gets off, the air purifier switches on and gets rid of all the hairs that you might not wish to have. And it's also continually monitoring the temperature and humidity so as to keep it at an ideal level for your cat through it would seem, some sort of external air conditioning unit, nevertheless. But it's I forgot what was it? What did they actually call it?
That actually works with the pet hair.
I don't know. I thought it was maybe one of those things which perhaps is a bit on the gimmicky side rather than on the practically useful side. And they were trying to lure us into all their other AI things, which are actually potentially more useful things like ovens that identify what's in them and clothes dryers that identify what's in them.
Or you're going to say ovens that identify as something else.
Clothes dryer.
An oven that identifies as a laptop.
Yes, indeed. Well, that, and the fridges that know what are in them and so forth. I was quite taken with the Amazfit's first really rugged watch, the T-Rex 3, which I think was launched there, all for under $300. You get a... it's very rugged. It's amazingly tough. It's got a 13-day battery life, 1.5-inch screen, AMOLED, very tough, waterproof down to 10 atmospheres, whatever it is. And I just thought it was amazingly good value for what you get. So I was pretty impressed. It'd be interesting to see how it shapes up in the real world. But it was very good getting some first impressions of that. One of the other things I quite liked, I tried has been out before, but the Time Kettle X1 AI Interpreter Hub. AI was obviously put into that title. It's the closest I've got to the leech in your ear yet for translation, which I
And well, babelfish.
Yes, we actually the babelfish. That's the one. Yeah, and you actually, it's a little box that you carry around with you, and it's got two ear pieces. And I had a conversation with a man from China, from the company, about his car's aspirations. He said he didn't own a car, but nevertheless, we've talked about cars in Chinese to English, which is actually quite good. It did seem to do a pretty good job of it. As close as I've got yet to it being instant. I mean, it's still delayed a bit, but wow. that I enjoyed that.
That was great.
I'd like to try it out properly, in fact. And one other thing I rather liked on the Shark Ninja stand was their robot vacuum that can blow into corners to sort of whip up dust that you might not reach normally with a robot vacuum, and then it sucks it in. So that was rather clever. It also can cope with sort of uneven carpets. It can climb up to about 10 centimetres by lifting up its front. So I was pretty impressed by that, actually.
Oh, I like that. Well, you don't have to use extra attachments and
It's an extendable mop to get right to the edge. Yes, so it'd work out.
I love that. I love the thing I loved. One of the things I loved about the old gadget show when the three of us were doing it was... So, because it was always you and me versus each other, John. And it was like, they'd tell us we'd be in some, we'd be in some house in the Midlands. It would be like a show home. And they'd made it really dirty, which always felt wrong. And then we'd send these robot things and whatever. And the house would still look like crap, even when these gadgets had...
They certainly were rather challenging, I think, some of the vacuum cleaner tests. I mean, they certainly seemed to involve more than most houses would get in the
way. Yeah, hundreds and thousands, cat hair. I remember, do you remember, yes, Susie? Cat hair and dog hair. It is interesting. I mean, the theory, I'm not sure, Susie, what your reaction was. I was quite excited by that. I thought, yeah, that's great, because you're right. Getting into the corner, getting the bits and stuff that a normal vacuum doesn't get to, that's great. But do you think did it work? Was there any evidence that it would work?
They did have a few little bits around that it did seem to get at, a few little orange capsules or something, which
excellent.
Yes, so
with our hundreds of thousands and our cat hair to do a good gadget show style test.
I think we need to do that. The 2010 style domestic dirty house test. We'll have to do something like that in the gadget show studio when we're together.
John, all the PR beforehand, they were bigging up this flying car. Was it there? Was it impressive? What did you think?
It wasn't overly impressive. Is it just a model of it, really? It's from a company called Aleph, and they're doing what you expect increasingly a flying car now to be, which is more of a sort of VTOL, vertical takeoff and landing drone, really, which can also drive along and act as a car. I mean, flying cars are funny things, really. They sort of capture public imagination, but they're always, always slightly disappointing. Personally, I think largely because they're not very good at either role, and they're very expensive. I don't think this one is really an exception to that, although it's a bit in the modern trend of what a flying car is conceptualised as, because it's got that VTOL approach. What do you think of that sort of...
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because I think I'm right, Jase. It's supposed to launch next year. Whether it will or not, I have no idea. But I suppose it's the idea of this vertical takeoff and be able to fly quite quickly and zoom over the traffic. It all sounds very Jetsons-esque, doesn't it, flying cars? We've been talking about them for years and years, but we never seem to get to the point where anything's actually launched. And then you've got all the sort of legalisation of
this is the thing.
Air control and everything, haven't you?
Yeah. And you know that, before the gadget show, I had a private pilot's licence. And the reason that I can't say I've got a private pilot's license is actually because you constantly need to renew licenses that put you up above, people that you could potentially, endanger if you mess up. The rules and regulations, the skill set, the money around being licensed, continually insured to fly an object above people is highly complex. And it's another thing, I love luxury gadgets. I'm really into yachts and things that are just a bit exotic and way out of my price range, things I'll never be able to afford. And you have to put these in that category, really, don't you? Because you're not going to just, even if it was like, I don't know, 250 grand, right? Which is way beyond most people's even fantasy budget, us included. But it would be quite reasonable for something so exotic. Even then, do we really want, Matey Boy Lives Down the Road to be flying above you in a device that's so complex and also when things go wrong, which happens with even the motor car, which is so evolved. Mm. You know, you see people at the side of the motorway every time you go on the motorway, don't you? Something's broken down. When that happens to a vehicle above a town, I mean, it's terrifying. So while I'm hugely enthused by the kind of Jetsons concept, I don't think it. I it doesn't feel practical, does it?
No.
I think further down the line, probably the idea of drones being able to fly out. I don't know. Let's just take an example of some medical kit to some remote place in Africa, or you know, where you can't get there by road or whatever. That works, but that's not really flying cars. That's more in the drone, smaller drone kind of feel, isn't it? And that can work. But
and there's also something. There's also something problematic in the. Well, this is an eVTOL. This one, so it's an electric vertical takeoff and landing, you know, system. And there's a real issue around electric flying vehicles. So not super lightweight tiny drones, but anything that carries, that carries people and has all the, you know, relevant safety systems and large, big rotors and things like that. The range is a real issue. What's the range of this one, John?
Well, they're hoping for 200 miles of driving range and 110 miles of flying range, which strikes me as a bit ambitious.
So, and also I would say that one of the things that attracted me to flying back in the day was that I could go more than 110 miles. Do you see what I mean? Like, why would I go in? We're going to drive. I mean, I drive in where I live in Cornwall. I drive 110 miles to get or thereabout. I drive 85 miles to get to my nearest proper train station to go to Birmingham for the Gadget Show podcast studio or over to London for a job or whatever. Yeah. Mm. And so it could barely do. In fact, you know what? It could do that. But I'd have to find a charger there because I couldn't get back. So 110 miles really for a flying vehicle is next to useless, really.
And I think the other big problem is if they ever were to get cheap enough to get some sort of mass adoption, I mean, it would be intolerable. I mean, just imagine that, you know, so everybody coming out of a train station got into one of these and flew off. I mean, the sky would be sort of black with these buzzing, horrible things.
Like, is it the Fifth Element? I can't remember the one where you've got exactly that, or, you know, that kind of... you know, in Blade Runner, the spinners—they're called spinners. You know, there's not too many. Whereas
I think
is it Fifth Element where they're hanging off them and drop. They're having some fights here, and there's literally thousands of them. You're right, in this sort of daisy chain configuration, which is what we'd have to be. We have to be in some form of automated daisy chain, and then, well, it's like being in a train, isn't it? It's all the fantasy element of it, the freedom, is lost.
Yes.
Everybody's been very excited, obviously, recently about the Apple launch. Shall we talk about iPhone 16, gentlemen?
Oh, yeah. Let's do it.
And it's not just iPhone 16, actually. We've got a few things to talk about here. So we'll start with the phone, though, iPhone 16. So some refreshed colours, which everybody likes to get very excited about. The dual cameras are back, side by side, obviously, for the spatial video and AI, or Apple Intelligence, as they've renamed it, of course.
Yeah, acronym has been redefined.
Yeah, I think probably the biggest news with this was the new chip, don't you? The A18 that's replacing the A16 Bionic, ready for the Apple Intelligence. And we should mention that there isn't any yet. You'll get the normal Siri with it. So you've got to wait for these software updates, which I think is quite interesting to be selling a phone on the promise of the software updates. Not that I don't think they're going to update. I think they will. But I just think that the whole process is quite interesting. The new A18 chip should have increased battery life. They haven't said how much yet, but they have said you get more playback. So you would expect that chip would use less power, wouldn't you, really? An action button, which we know about, but slightly bigger than was on the iPhone 15. And a new camera control button, where you can swipe and tap, and that's on the, it sits flush, doesn't it, on the side. I haven't had a play with that yet, but I think that's quite interesting. I'd like to know if that's intuitive and whether that feels better when you're taking your pictures. But it sounds like they've done it really well in that you can slide your finger, tap, press, so you can get the menu up and you can do lots of different utilize that really well for your camera. Bigger screen.
I was just saying that was another thing they were saying they hadn't actually brought yet some of the functions for the slide. I think because it was going to be a sort of like you get on a normal digital camera, sort of half press down to lock the exposure and the shutter, but that's coming apparently. It's not there yet.
That's another software update that we'd have to wait for. Right, in terms of their Pro upgrade, so the 16 Pro has a bigger screen, 6.3 inches, but they've both got the A18 Pro chip. And the Pro Max is a 6.9-inch screen with this ultra-wide angle and macro lens. You can also edit the audio, spatial audio, so I think that's quite interesting. So those are the headlines on your iPhone 16. Then you've got your Series 10 Apple Watch, obviously that's 10th anniversary of the Apple Watch. Not massive differences, slight design difference, bigger screen, but from a health point of view, it can. This is what I find interesting. It can work out whether you've got sleep apnea or not. So if you're one of these people that says, I don't snore and I haven't got sleep apnea, your watch will be able, this will be able to detect it. Then you've got your AirPods, AirPods 4. Now this is quite interesting as well, because that's now they're now going to support active noise cancellation, which, you know, we talked about that a lot on the last podcast, didn't we? And how that works for us. And the Pro 2 is going to have a hearing aid. It's got to be passed in America by the FDA, first of all. But yeah, going down the health front, I think these two things are quite interesting. I think what's interesting about this is they're also looking at their audience here and their market and the age of their market. You know, because once you obviously start to get over a certain age, you do get a degradation of hearing, especially with loud music. For me, with loud motorbikes and loud music.
I can't even imagine, Susie, with a father that works in the rock industry.
And my daddy's
your job now in the pit lane. I mean, my God.
We don't like our hearing in our family. But, you know, I just think it's quite interesting that they've targeted their audience here, and probably slightly for their older audience, this is going to be a thing that people will be like, yeah, you know, this is a unique selling point that I think is really vital.
I think it's important, because it's interesting also that I was speaking to Dolby engineers about this, they say now increasingly people are almost expecting from their stereo headphones, in a sense, to have their hearing, any deficiencies in the hearing supplemented by listening in headphones. And the Atmos can do that and things. Yeah,
I do find it fascinating. And you know, you remember the days on the Gadget Show, I was well known as an Apple fanboy, hook, line and sinker. And I then moved away from it. And I think editorially, I needed to. I think it to be an objective gadget journalist with a very small J. You know, we all need to sample. You know, the different sides of the track. And but I'm kind of back on board. I've got to be honest with you. I was quite enthused by some of the stuff that they announced.
And would do you think these improvements are enough for you to want to upgrade from your 13 to a 16? Would that be...
Yes, it is, but I don't think that's any big deal, is it? Because it would be more impressive if I had a 15 Pro and I was going to upgrade to the 16 Pro.
I've got a 13 as well, and I think, you know, this does sound interesting, but to go from a 15 to 16, would you? And if you would, why?
So I think it would be the A18 and A18 Pro chipset with all the kind of machine learning functionality that they've been pushing. So this is obviously part of a trend which we're going to be covering a lot on this podcast, which is the move from AI in the cloud to AI on device. I know that Microsoft, for example, are looking at a suite of hardware products. So I'm guessing that'll be laptops and the Surface, if they still call it the Surface. You know, where you've got AI on device. And the reason that's important is that AI can only work at the moment, really, in a meaningful sense, if you're using the kind of large language model interfaces like OpenAI's ChatGPT or Gemini or Grok on X, you've got to have a connection, haven't you? You've got to have a decent data connection. And that's why there's this latency. Whenever you go to an engine and you type in, could you help me rewrite this email or whatever you do, there's this big delay, right? Well, doing it on the device will obviously lessen that delay. And also, in a way, what they've done, it's like a Frankenstein thing. They've got this, they've got Siri, right? And they've just suddenly gone, it's alive! They've brought Siri. This is, if their claims are backed up by reality, Siri's now going to be, hopefully, a much more human-like interface, so a more logical language-based interface that apparently, and again I'm only going on what they claim they're going to be able to do, but it's going to work almost like an intelligent intern that you've got working for your company, right? So if I had an intern working for me and they said, what do you want me to do, Jace? I'd say, well, I'll tell you what you could do in the morning. Could you sort through my emails, find out what I've got coming up today, and just give me some headline bullet points on, you know, what's come in, and also my text messages, because I get really confused running my business. I'm good at the talky stuff, I'm not good at the organizational stuff, so could you interpret that for me? Well, it seems that that's what Siri's, that this Apple Intelligence via Siri, I'm guessing, is going to do. Is that what you got from it?
Yeah, I thought so. And I think, I wonder if this is sort of, they talked a lot about the safety element as well, of it not going to the cloud. So your data not being in the cloud and being just on your device, which I think a lot of people are concerned about with AI, how much of their data is going to be taken away and harvested and whatnot. But if it stays on your device, what did you get from it, John?
Yes, well, I got the impression that I'd want to test it out for real, really, to see whether it was actually useful or not in terms of, you know, summarising emails. And I mean, some of the demonstration didn't seem overly useful, like it would recognise a building you were standing in. Well, you probably have done that yourself, sort of thing. I mean, and some of the getting your
Google,
rest.
Google Lens does it already, doesn't it?
Yes, some of the things, that was my instant, slightly unfair reaction, because I'm always thinking how good Google is at identifying cars and how bad Apple is at identifying cars, because it doesn't on all the thousands of pictures I've got of cars, because I've always been interested in cars, on my phone. And Google's always been much better at that. So, again, it's one I want to see how well it can do it for real.
So in summary, will you hate me if I just say it feels like we're treading water a little bit, like we're in sort of waiting mode? They're kind of moderate updates, aren't they? And I mean, if you take, for example, the Apple, the Watch Ultra 2, just the new colour, I mean, it's beautiful, the matte black. Oh, it's beautiful. Very sexy. I get it. I know.
And that strap.
Feel your breath. Oh, Bradbury.
That chain strap in black titanium. Oh my God.
But the internals are the same. This is my point. Yeah. We're waiting, aren't we?
Yeah, we are. And you get these kind of stopovers, don't you, from Apple. And I guess from other manufacturers, where you get huge years, like last year with the Vision Pro, the device that we started this podcast with, the first thing that we really ever reviewed. And how do you follow that up? You don't really, do you? You do iterative announcements. But I feel, don't know what you think, John, this could be the start. The Apple Intelligence stuff could be the start of something really quite significant for the Apple product range.
Well, it'd be interesting to see how good it is and how useful or enjoyable it is in practice. I mean, I think that's the that'll be interesting. I mean, lots of people probably will just upgrade, because, you know, then maybe they don't want to bother to replace the battery in their old one. They got somebody in the family who wants their old phone, and they will upgrade anyway. But whether, obviously, Apple can't rely on that, and increasingly can't rely on that, as we all tend to keep our phones longer. So it'd be interesting to see what sort of practical advantages the Apple Intelligence yields.
And we await the software updates. So pre-sale, 13th of this month, 13th of September, and then it could be in your hands on the 20th of September. In terms of price, your basic iPhone 16 starts at £799 and goes all the way up to the 16 Pro Max, £1,599.
That's with a terabyte of storage. So that's,
which you can, is,
you can, yes, get it for £1,199, I think, which is somewhat.
But yes, you'd want the terabyte, wouldn't you, John?
It's all those pictures I want to test out the AI on. I think
if you push the video to it, you know, to, yes, the levels that they've allowed you to, in terms of that kind of, yeah, ProRes format and 4K 120 frames, you're going to need a terabyte drive.
Yes, and they always make you pay for that storage, don't they, Apple? They're very, yeah, very, very, very clever in that respect. Whatever it is, discriminating marketing or something. It's probably got some economist phrase for it.
And finally, it wasn't just Apple with an announcement this week. Finally, PlayStation 5 Pro. Jace, what have,
yes,
you got for us?
Before I tell you, do you remember, it was a Christmas episode of The Gadget Show. It's when we were based at the Custard Factory in Digbeth in Birmingham.
Yeah.
And you you had a secret present, a Christmas present. I unwrapped it on the show, and it was the new PlayStation. I forget which one it was.
It was me and John, and it was PlayStation 3 at the, yeah, end of 2006.
Ha-ha!
PlayStation 3.
Yep.
Absolutely gobsmacking. 5 months away from releasing this. Mm-hmm. This is like, have you got a future machine or something? Where did you get this from?
Oh, hey, beautiful memories.
See, we used to treat you so well.
You did. That's almost retro now, that console. I'm a big PlayStation fan. I'm also a big Xbox fan. I'm just a gaming fan. I've got a gaming PC that I'm actually talking to you via all the gadgets, and hugely still into my gaming. So I was really excited to see that 4 years on from the original release of the PlayStation 5, the Pro has arrived. And I'll tell you the spec and stuff, and then we'll talk about what I think is sort of the controversy. I don't think that's too big a word to put around one aspect of this release. So, yeah, they are upgrading the GPU that has 67% more compute than the current PS5. Always difficult to know without getting hands-on, because it doesn't come out until November the 7th, what that really means, how it really relates. Like, I'd like to play my current PS5 against the PS5 Pro on a game like Gran Turismo and see what some of the sexy upgrades that they're talking about mean. Sexiest for me, I'm a big fan of ray tracing. Gamers listening, watching will know what I'm talking about. This is the computation of individual rays of light that results, the aesthetic result is reflections and really immersive, convincing, organic light, which is weird because sometimes you can apply ray tracing to a non-realistic game, so almost like a cartoony game, and suddenly that cartoony game looks like the real world, because light has this way, because of the way that we look at the world, of you know, giving us a sense of reality. It is a really big innovation. It's something interesting that they talked about on the iPhone 16 launch, didn't they, for the Pro version, that it had enhanced ray tracing for what they call console level games. Well, I'm going to say, I think I'm pretty confident in this statement, that when they say console level games for the new iPhone 16 and 16 Pro, it ain't going to be on this level. This is going to be ray tracing on the next level. They're saying that the new hardware with the 5 Pro PlayStation allows rays to be cast at double and at times triple the speeds of the current PlayStation 5 consoles. That's quite a claim. And then, of course, they went down the AI route, obviously. Machine learning is now part of their hardware chipset. Something called AI Pixel Enhancement, which will fill in the blanks and upscale content for those of us that have 4K and in certain situations, 8K screens. So that's interesting. They said that they're very keen to point out that this thing that they call PlayStation Spectral Super Resolution, right? A bit of a mouthful, that. That's their kind of catch-all for how AI and machine learning is going to fill in the blanks and enhance the visual experience on the PlayStation 5 Pro as opposed to its predecessor or its current the current version. But it'll only work, and this is very important, with certain games that kind of have that badge on it. Now, this is something, as a massive game enthusiast with a huge retro console collection, this is something that gaming hardware manufacturers often do. They sell hardware based on the promise that forthcoming games will have a special badge on them that will utilize said hardware upgrade. And they've done it again with the PlayStation 5 Pro, but they have gone on to name games that will utilize some of these new advances. Alan Wake 2 is mentioned, Assassin's Creed Shadows. Interesting, the one that I was most excited about because I'm a big driving sim fan, Gran Turismo 7. I mean, if you play Gran Turismo 7 and you're racing around in a Lamborghini, you just want it to look as damn good as possible.
So are we assuming that this is really for serious gamers rather than the casual gamer? How would you reply to that?
I do think it's a serious gamers system, actually. I do. And I think in that respect, oh my goodness, the internet's going to hate me for saying this because everyone's up in arms about the price. But for the price, it certainly suggests that it will offer some really interesting upgrades, because the likes of Gran Turismo 7, I mean, for the price, what you get being offered, I think, is quite interesting. What do you think?
Well, let me just jump in, because the price is $699, so the OG is $479, so it's sort of £220 more, which I think for the average person's pocket is quite a lot of money.
Oh, they're breaking the ceiling. I mean, they're smashing the ceiling into oblivion. That's never been a price that that has been paid for standard kind of popular consoles. Some niche consoles, maybe back in the day, sort of in relative price terms. But that is a huge amount of money, John, isn't it?
Well, it's a lot more than the standard model. But at the same time, compared to a gaming PC, it's probably quite competitively priced, I would have thought. But I'm not an expert in this area. So, but you clearly are. I mean, what's your view compared to the?
PC? It's a really difficult one because, you know, and people get very upset and very emotional about this stuff. And I understand why, because, look, £699 is a huge amount of money to pay. The equivalent gaming laptop, I'm guessing, and, you know, feel free to comment on this, listeners and viewers, but my guess is you wouldn't get this sort of hardware performance from an equivalent priced laptop But then the laptop could do all of your office tasks, all of your social media. You could watch videos. Well, you can watch videos and content on this, but you get what I mean? It's not a do-it-all device. It's very much the choice of a small percentage of gamers that just want the absolute best.
But yeah, I mean, you are a serious gamer, though. You know, I think for casual gamers, this might be a step too far.
Talking of gaming PCs, there's one I'd like, I saw at EFA, I'd quite like your view on as an expert. It's called the Tecno Mega Mini G1. It's claimed to be the world's smallest water-cooled gaming PC. It's scarcely bigger than your hand in terms of its format, but it's got an i9 13th generation processor and an RTX 4060 graphics card, and it's a sort of combination of liquid and fan cooling. Pretty quiet, very small. I wondered what you thought of it. Unfortunately, I haven't got a price for it, but
yeah, no, you. So it was mentioned in the pre-show notes, and I have brought it up. No experience of it in the physical. Love the look of it. I would encourage anyone listening and watching this to do the same. Look it up on your search engine. But I mean, with no price, it's really difficult. I mean, straight away it's Wi-Fi 6E. So the Wi-Fi 7 capability of the PlayStation 5 Pro is exciting, because the thing with the console, as you know, this is the important thing, right? You can't upgrade it, right? Okay, you can put the Blu-ray thing in it, but you can't upgrade it. And I think you can't upgrade it. I mean, if they're going to go down some kind of upgrade path, they certainly haven't announced it yet. So my guess is you'll never be able to upgrade this PlayStation 5 Pro. And this machine has to sit in that configuration for 2 to 3, 4 years at that price. You've got to get that kind of longevity out of it to get your investment back. So, you know, it's really cool that it's got Wi-Fi 7, for example. If it was Wi-Fi 6, I might feel less enthusiastic about it. The AI stuff, the implementation of a machine learning, a hardware chipset, is also interesting, because that's something actually that could be upgraded through software updates. You know, we talked, didn't we, earlier in this podcast about the hardware on the new iPhone 16s, the A18 chipsets and the Pro, that they're promising stuff, but they haven't delivered it yet. And we weren't happy with that, but we seem to believe Apple. We seem to sort of accept the concept, right? Well, we have to do the same with the PlayStation. It's something that is, I'm guessing, subject to upgrade via software updates, right? So there is an upgrade path there of sorts, but no hardware upgrade path. And that's just something to consider when you're investing your money. But your point was simple. I've kind of overdone the answer a little bit. Your point was, how does it compare to gaming PCs? You know, they don't make a huge profit on these consoles, you know. What they're trying to do is to get you to invest in games and other content that they get, you know, an upside from. So, you know, video content and all the rest of it. So it does, I'm going to get shot for this. It does represent value for money in the widest sense, yeah. But it's the most expensive console that I've ever witnessed.
Thank you, Jason.
Thank you, Susie. Thank you, John.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, everyone, for listening and watching this special edition of the Gadget Show podcast ahead of when we start Series 2 proper in a few weeks' time. And we put this together because there's been such a whirlwind of significant tech announcements. John, thank you for joining us. That stuff from IFA in Berlin was absolutely awesome.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, John. And an emergency pod. We had to do it, didn't we?
We did, yeah.
As I said, we've got more episodes planned for the coming weeks. And if you'd like to come and join us in our Gadget Show studio in Birmingham, then keep your eyes peeled on the socials for all of the info. But until then, if you like what we're doing, then you can obviously show it by following and subscribing and liking. But until Series 2 is upon us, unless we have to have another emergency pod, it's goodbye from all of us. Take care.
Thanks, guys.
The Gadget Show podcast with Jason and Susie was presented by Jason Bradbury and Susie Perry off the telly. It was produced by Ewan Keel and Tom Clint, and is a North One production.